Welcome, everybody, to the Gaming Careers Podcast. It's been a couple of weeks, so we've got plenty of news to cover. Obviously, I'm joined by my co-host, Benjamin Green, from over in the States. Ben, how are you doing?
Good, man. I got a little bit of time at the beach, which is nice, and summer's kind of coming to a close here, so I think I'm getting back on the grind with the podcast, but I'm a good man. How about you?
I've been very well, yeah, very well rested. Had a nice weekend to myself, so plenty of games being played, but keen to jump into this news. Let's give a quick summary as to what we're going to be going through today. Obviously, the title of the live show for people that are tuning in live now on YouTube is all about the Streamlabs and Stream Hatchet Q2 report, so plenty of data about the big streaming platforms and how their numbers have changed over the past 3 months. We've also got lots of news on Twitch's new ad formats. Streamlabs OBS has launched a new feature called Highlighter that we're going to be talking about. There's the Twitch Safety Center, Discord launching a couple of new features, Amazon retiring the Blacksmith extension, and we're going to be talking and just touching on briefly the XQC's counterclaims on a DMCA strike, as well as our viewer question as we do every week. So let's start with the big one, the Q2 report. I know that you're a data nerd like me, Ben, so you must have enjoyed going through all of the details here. I'm going to bring this up on screen, and then maybe you just want to start touching on it.
Yeah, sure. So I'm really excited to talk about this because I think it's the first time we've actually been able to show the report to you guys while talking through it, and it's very visual. So hopefully we can kind of show what we're saying as we go through it this time. So the big TLDR of this report is, once again, total hours are still up across the board for streaming, which is the big takeaway. And total hours streamed are actually down just a little bit, not much. But it's just super interesting that's the first quarter we've had it trend down a little bit in the last year or two. So overall thoughts, it's kind of what I expected. Although we keep saying, you know, it seems like it can't go any higher than this. I mean, live streaming just keeps growing and growing, especially the watch side of it, maybe not necessarily the streaming side. So obviously, if you're a streamer, great thing to see. There's lots of interest still coming in. Pete, what are your initial thoughts seeing this?
Yeah, I mean, for me, as soon as these reports go out, I'm jumping straight into the platform comparisons and seeing how Twitch has done, how YouTube has done, and how Facebook has done over the past quarter. I guess maybe not that surprisingly, but Twitch is still breaking records. Like, we really haven't seen this post-pandemic drop that we kind of assumed we would when it got to like Q3 2020. On the image that I'm showing on screen now, this graph, you see like the height of the pandemic, Q2 2020, it spiked massively, and then Q3 it sort of dropped a bit, and maybe most people presumed that it was going to be coming back down to pre-pandemic levels, but since then it's just gone up every single quarter. Total hours watched has gone up, so Twitch seemingly isn't struggling with getting new people to watch streams or getting people to watch more streams, one of the two of those. And we've seen in the past year, and certainly in the past quarter, how many major celebrities they've brought across, and I reckon that's a big factor in why so many people are discovering Twitch and then, you know, watching a lot of hours over there. The story isn't completely the same for YouTube. Let me just scroll down to YouTube and Facebook. YouTube, we've seen this sort of drop since the pandemic, and it has now returned to the pre-pandemic levels. One thing I think is interesting to highlight about YouTube, though, is that for Twitch and Facebook, the data includes non-gaming content. So just chatting, IRL, hot tubs, beaches, and whatever that category was called that lasted a whole couple of months. I think it still does exist, but it's a dead category already. But YouTube is just the YouTube gaming category. And I don't quite know why they do that. Maybe there's a limitation on the data that Stream Hatchet and Streamlabs can collect, but I think that's an important caveat to sort of mention here, because you can just look at this straight away and think, oh, that YouTube Live is dying, but we've seen how much these IRL and just chatting categories play a major part in Twitch's viewership. So it's important that maybe with that data as well, YouTube would also be seeing growth. It's difficult to say. I do think that kind of skews what we can look at here today in terms of like YouTube side of things, but we can certainly look at the Twitch and Facebook gaming. So I guess we just finish off quickly, scroll down to Facebook gaming, who again is growing massively, both in terms of total hours watched and total hours streamed. So you're getting streamers streaming for longer, or more streamers streaming to the platform, and more people watching streamers on the platform. So yeah, it's Facebook just the one that's constantly going to be under the radar for us, and it's just going to keep growing until it eventually overtakes somebody else, and we're like, okay, we have to start. Right. I have to re-log into my Facebook account to actually watch some of these things because I haven't been on it in about 5 years, but it clearly, it's still growing massively.
Facebook, I mean, it's a sleeping giant. I feel like looking at these numbers with just how consistent it is too. You see Twitch have a lot of swings and sort of YouTube too. But if you look at the graph for hours watched on Facebook, it's just a straight line up almost completely, which is pretty impressive. I will say the one thing about Facebook that's really interesting to me is that the unique channels are down. So even though there are more hours streamed, there's fewer people streaming on the platform. So that basically means that people are streaming for longer, but there's less of them, which is good if you're a streamer because there's less competition for you on the platform. But there's the data to show that if you stream for longer, then there's more people to watch you. So in terms of competitiveness, I think Facebook is in a really good spot. I think that's the same for Twitch to an extent, since the total hours streamed were down and the unique channels, not quite as much as Facebook though. You should have a little bit less competition on Twitch, but Facebook right now, I guess it's just newer compared to Twitch still. And it looks like a lot of people tried streaming on Facebook and stopped doing that. So if you are kind of a long-term Facebook streamer, it could be a really good time to get some more traction over there.
Yeah. The other, I think, really interesting stat to pull out of this article was that the number one streamed game across all three platforms is Grand Theft Auto 5. That's the most watched game across all three streaming platforms. And we've talked about the, like, how much of an impact the roleplay community has had on GTA 5. But that is really interesting for me, I think, to see, especially when you have like these huge esports events that are like League of Legends Worlds. And I guess they didn't have one in the last quarter. MSI might have just been quarter one. But even with their regular ongoing splits of tournaments, CSGO, League of Legends, like these huge esports titles don't trump GTA 5. Across the platform. So yeah, I thought that was a really interesting thing to pull out because it's a game that I don't watch too much of, but it just always is in the top five most watched games, isn't it?
It's just always up there. But I think it is interesting that Just Chatting, because we just talked about, they don't count it on the YouTube side. So I don't know if maybe if they did count that, Just Chatting would just win by a landslide, or how that factors into how they pull the data. But yeah, still, I mean, Grand Theft Auto, if you've been watching Twitch or any platform, it sounds like it's still been at the top there for a while. And even if you look at sort of the top publishers, Riot won the top publisher category, but just barely. And that's with both Valorant and League and their other two to three games they have versus Rockstar just being in GTA. So it's pretty impressive to see that much credibility and that much popularity for Grand Theft Auto all these years later, honestly. So I don't know if Grand Theft Auto 6 is on the way. Probably just keep updating 5 forever if I had to guess. But we'll see.
Yeah, I think just to touch on your point there about Just Chatting, the difficulty is, I guess, on having that as a category is that the different websites will probably categorize that differently themselves, whereas with when it's a game, it's so easy for Streamlabs and Stream Hatchet to collect the data and say, you know, GTA 5 is being played here on YouTube, here on Facebook, here on Twitch, and then they can collate all those numbers. Whereas when YouTube might have a category for cooking, that might fall under Just Chatting often in Twitch. So it's harder for them to be able to put that all together into one category. But yeah, I'll post a link to this report in the chat of the stream, and obviously if anyone listening along to the podcast, it'll be in the show notes if you do want to dive into it. I realize it's not everybody's cup of tea to get really into the numbers, but I think it's every quarter is a good measuring stick of where we are in the industry and, you know, how these platforms are developing. So let me grab that and put that in chat. I don't know if there's anything else you want to cover on that, or if you want to go straight across to the next topic.
Yeah, not too much on that. We just got you out Facebook once again. I will say, guys, I'm looking into TikTok. I'll report out on that soon. I know we keep talking about that here, but I'm doing some experimenting there. So we'll have some more info on at least that platform pretty soon. The next piece of news we have is that Twitch launched a couple of new ad formats. Well, really just one, but we've seen another one kind of pop up that they talked about a while ago. And the first one is stream display ads, which, if you're familiar with display ads in the traditional sense, they're kind of similar. Basically, a new type of ad that will show around your stream while you're live. It won't actually interrupt the broadcast the same way that a pre-roll does or a mid-roll, but sort of shows around your broadcast. I haven't actually seen this live on the platform yet, Pete. I don't know if you've seen any just poking around Twitch in the past week or two.
No, I've just seen the examples that they've sort of shared on socials, and we've got a GIF looping here of one of the examples. I actually prefer this way of the display ads being shown than how YouTube does it, where it kind of overlays the video. But I think that's a personal taste thing. Some people will prefer the video not changing size and being able to like click a little X on the top corner of a display ad. There's a second image down here below of like a more intrusive one where the stream goes up into the top right, and then it's like taking up maybe more like a third of the stream rather than a little display ad. But I mean, the problem really with Twitch ads is it's so difficult for any creator to make a substantial amount of money through ads, especially when you compare it to YouTube ads, and that, you know, does pay creators pretty well. Twitch, with it being a live broadcast, they just can't bring the same numbers in terms of advertisers and in terms of the actual monetary value. So I appreciate them looking into different options, and this is certainly, I think, a good balance between helping creators make money, helping Twitch make money, and not being too intrusive to the viewers. So I think this is a pretty good compromise. There are some details that they talked about in their sort of monthly update stream that they do, so I'll read out some of those now. The stream display ads, that you're going to see them referenced as SDAs, they're 10-second long ads. They show on channels. Viewers are able to see and hear the creator still while the ads are displayed, and creators don't have to do anything different to use them. So I think it'll just be through their normal like run an ad, or if they have them enabled, maybe they'll automatically run. There is the opt-out option for streamers. So if you don't want these ads or the money that they generate, you can opt out, which is always a nice option. It's such an easy way for Twitch to keep everybody happy by just having opt-out into features like this. And they can be shown up to 8 times per hour, and they're 10 seconds each. So I think until we see these really on platform, we're not going to get a great understanding as to, you know, how obtrusive they are. I wonder how it will work with things like theater mode or full screen. If you're watching a stream in full screen, like, is it still going to push the video up? I imagine it would. As far as I can tell, the rate split between Twitch and the creator is the default. So 50-50, unless you're on a contract with a different split. And currently, as we've said, it's in beta. Later this year, it's going to roll out to partners and affiliates. And usually how they do that is partners first, then affiliates, and they do it kind of by country. So I wouldn't be surprised if it was US and then UK and Canada and Australia, and sort of rolling out region by region as they bring more advertisers on that will fill these spots. So what do you think? What do you think, Ben, overall?
Yeah, I mean, I think I kind of agree with you. I much prefer this type of ad. If we have to have ads, I prefer this type of ad versus especially the pre-roll, but also the mid-roll. And in the case that you can't opt out of those, right? You can mitigate them by running your own ads in certain intervals, but you can't fully opt out of them, unlike display ads. But I would rather have display ads that you couldn't opt out of than mid-rolls, right? Because that completely interrupts the flow. And yes, they added the whole mini player thing in the top right, but you still can't hear the stream. And it, honestly, as someone who's watched through those, it's very hard to see the stream anyway for what's going on. Whereas this, you can still watch the content. You can still hear everything. So I think this is a much better experience, honestly. I don't know. I'm curious to see what it's like, because you can opt out of it, but I wonder if they have kind of preset intervals like pre-rolls and mid-rolls where it'll default to playing one at a certain time, or if you can manually show a display ad kind of. It'd be interesting to see that format for the actual streamer side of things. But overall, the more we can get away from forced ads you can't get around, or just really break up the streaming experience, the better, I think, especially for Twitch compared to YouTube.
Yeah, and another thing that's worth mentioning is I don't believe at the current time in testing that if you run these SDAs, it affects the ability for a pre-roll to run on your channel when somebody joins your channel. So, you know, if you run a traditional a video in display ad enough times, then it will actually remove the requirement for an ad to display as somebody arrives on your stream. This currently doesn't affect that at all. So hopefully they do implement that as well, so that streamers can start to run this type of ad as a way of stopping the pre-roll ad from running. But the other thing we've seen, if I go back to the screen share, is more of these multiplayer ads. Now, these were announced November last year. So we've seen a few of them sort of in play. We've got a screenshot of an actual one, but I've just brought up the multiplayer ads page on the Twitch help right now to remind people what we talked about in November, which are these sort of ads that come up that allow the viewers to vote or interact in some way with the advert. And as a reward for them interacting, the creator, the streamer that you're watching, receives money through bits. So I think this is a really nice way of, as long as it's not too obtrusive, I think it's a really nice way of being able to entice the viewers into, you know, making an advert more useful for Twitch. Because obviously the example that they've shown here on the website is like a Twitch ad. So it's like encouraging people to buy gift cards or like getting them to vote on which kind of gift card they like the most. But the screenshot that you sent across today is maybe a more realistic example. Is this actually a screenshot you took yourself or you found this on the internet?
Yeah, I was watching some Pokemon Unite streams and this popped up.
Why don't you explain through what you're seeing here?
Yeah, so basically this just popped up while I was watching. For those of you audio listeners, it just says multiplayer ad poll. And it's an ad for Converse. And it basically is three different types of shoe colors. And it just asks you, which color are you wearing this fall? But the interesting part is that you can see how many votes it has. And then you can see the reward for the streamer at the bottom that says 25 bits. So that is a really good incentive to actually vote on one of those things. Plus, it didn't actually stop the content, right? You can still see the stream behind it pretty easily. It's not really that intrusive overall. And I think as soon as you click one of the options, it would just go away. So it's a pretty good ad format, I think, compared to, again, anything that interrupts the entire stream experience, in my view. And it's also just a very innovative ad solution that I haven't really seen in other places. It seems like an ad that really takes advantage of what Twitch is and how Twitch kind of works for streaming. So I think this kind of thing will be received a lot better overall than the current mid-roll and pre-roll experience.
Do you think Converse are actually using the data they get from this, or you think they're just putting three shoes in front of you to subliminally message to you that you need to buy some new Converse this this fall?
I mean, the main goal is definitely just awareness, right? But I think they'll look at the data. I would probably, if I was the marketing person, not really take it that seriously, because chances are a lot of people are just clicking something to get the bits and not really thinking about it that much. But you know, I mean, maybe there's actually decent data behind it. I don't know how many people actually see this kind of ad, but it could be a lot of data for that.
Yeah, I think I totally agree with you. The purpose is surely just to get your brand in front of people. And if even 10% of people like pay attention to which option they click or think about it a little bit more than just what can I click to get rid of this as quickly as possible, then it's value for the brand, because at least they're getting some data from it. So this, I guess, is still rolling out, because I haven't seen it yet. And is this the first time you've seen it, or have you been seeing it all over?
Yes.
I'm wondering if it's a US-based thing versus me in the UK, or if it's just rolling out slowly.
It could be. Yeah, this is the first one I've seen. We talked about it months ago, I feel like, when they announced
November,
it. Yeah, so hopefully we'll see more of them. I guess Converse is doing it. Maybe some other brands will opt into it. I honestly think they could have done a better question to put it bluntly, because it's kind of a boring question in my opinion, but the format is kind of cool and there could be some cool ways to use that, I think.
Yeah, they're not looking after us Brits who spell color with a U in that question, are they? They've got to think about their international audience here.
Yeah.
But yeah, I thought this was just useful to sort of pair in with the multiplayer ads, because you can see Twitch is clearly caring about trying to make, I mean, realistically, Twitch is probably getting pressure from Amazon to be profitable. So they're having to think a bit more about how they can make some more money through ads. But I think both of these options are probably pretty good for creators. You know, if the bottom line is more money and it's not as bad for the viewers, then I'm all for it. Let's move on to talking about that Streamlabs software that, you know, that divides opinions all over the internet, because they have introduced a new feature called Highlighter. I think just Streamlabs OBS Highlighter it's called. So it's built into Streamlabs OBS, and it's effectively a video editing software that is free to use. So it's not under their Prime subscription. Whether they'll put certain things under Prime in the future, I don't know. but it's the whole process of it is designed to be very, very simple to use. So effectively, it's making use of the replay buffer that's built into OBS and Streamlabs OBS, so that you can, while streaming, click the replay buffer to save clips, and then at the end of your stream, you get a whole folder of all of your clips from that stream, and then you can very simply reorder them, trim them down, put them all together into a video with like your intro and outro end cards if you want to, and then export directly to places like YouTube. So it's designed to be like very, very beginner friendly for people that don't want to be sifting through their VODs to find the clip, to download it, to import it into Premiere Pro, to then export it and understand all the settings of YouTube. You do it all from your streaming app, as long as you remember to save the replay buffer whenever you get a clip that's worth saving. And of course, you can review these and remove them or save them for a later video if you want to. I think it's pretty cool, actually. There's definitely a need for this, because I think there's a big, big barrier for streamers that realize that you kind of need to create content on other platforms. And we can see that Streamlabs have kind of prioritized this. In our last podcast, we covered their new CrossClip website, an app where you can create vertical videos for TikTok. And this seems to be pushing in that same direction for YouTube or 16:9 style videos. So yes, it's basic. Yes, it's not for the power users that want real customization and J cuts and, you know, all kinds of advanced functionality that you can get through a traditional video editor. But for beginners getting started, the fact that it's free, I don't think I can complain about anything
right
here.
Yeah, I agree. I haven't actually had the chance to try it out yet, but the whole concept is pretty cool. And I was actually surprised by how many options you have here. So you can add transitions, adding your own background music. There's different export options, kind of, which is nice. So, and the fact that it's built into the streaming software, I think, is very big, especially because we talk about, at least I talk about Streamlabs OBS really being good for beginners. So if you're pretty new to streaming at all and you've never edited a video before, I think this kind of thing is perfect because it's built right in there. But it's way more powerful than Twitch's highlight tool, right? Where you can actually string clips together and add music and build an actual decent montage sort of thing. So I think it's pretty cool. My only concern is whether it slows down Streamlabs OBS, which I think has been kind of a concern just in using the program in the past. It used to be very lightweight, and they keep adding new features, which is nice if you want to have everything in one kind of application. But I do wonder how it affects performance with, because this is a pretty full suite of tools you have here to go make your video. So I'd have to test it out, but I love the concept of it overall.
I think that's the common concern. For streamers that started before the days of Streamlabs OBS, a lot of people know how particular you have to be about what is running on your computer, you know, like closing down anything, like literally, if you can get rid of one Chrome tab, it's worth it before you start streaming. And computers have gotten better, and Streamlabs have obviously built a lot of features on top of the base OBS when they did fork it, and the two projects have kind of gone in different directions now. And I do think that Streamlabs has that advantage, I would say, with being more beginner friendly and maybe more enticing for beginners. Like, I see a lot of new streamers just using that software by default. And so if this is going to encourage them to create content for, you know, other platforms like YouTube, then I think I'm all for it. It should, I can't imagine that it would be you know, conflicting and competing for CPU cycles whilst you're streaming, because this is really something that you do once your stream is finished and once the replay buffer has ended.
That's true.
One thing I would definitely advise is manually adding like your intro and outro, or making an intro outro. Like, I've got quite a few videos on YouTube about how to make things like that using more complex software. But if you can drag those finished videos into your Streamlabs highlighter, then you can apply them to every single video that you make. So even if you finish a stream where you haven't ever used that intro outro, your video will be there, and then you can include it and put it at the beginning. So I'm keen to see some examples of people using this and if it becomes useful. But at the end of the day, it's not for the power users, it's for the beginners, and hopefully it teaches them enough about editing video that maybe one day they do then transition into using something more professional. Or maybe Streamlabs sees loads of streamers using this and keeps developing it till it's, you know, a genuine solution for, you know, bigger streamers that are creating, I guess, more professional content.
Yeah, I think it has potential for that too, especially just to get your foot in the door with editing if you're totally new to it. And on your point of intros, I was curious if there's any Streamlabs Prime integration here. It looks like that's one of their Prime features, is you can make a intro in the software, sort of. So I guess that's how they kind of add to that. But I mean, the fact that you have this tool in there plus the vertical video tool is pretty nice if you just want to batch some content out quickly and just get something out. I'm a big believer that you should try and get at least some sort of video out, like not worry about the perfect video, but just get something out if you're not doing anything. So this is a good lightweight way to do that if you just want to put a quick montage, quick vertical video together and get those out. So we'll see kind of how it gets received, I think, after people start using it a bit more.
Yeah, let's move on to the next topic. Twitch's safety center. Not the most exciting of of topics, I don't think, but we've seen Twitch like group together bits of information like this before. I'll bring up the screen share. Effectively, this is like a portal or a hub for everything you could want about safety on Twitch. So as a streamer, as a viewer, as a moderator, there's all kinds of resources here. You can see across the top, you can sort of go into community guidelines, emotes. So if you wanted to know, you know, what is allowed and what isn't allowed in emotes, this is all built into one hub now, which I think is probably useful for streamers that ever want to find this stuff. Rather than Googling it, they can now come directly to safety.twitch.tv and hopefully find all the information that they want. There's been a big push from Twitch's standpoint over the past year for safety council and things like that. So maybe this has been something that they've been working hard on. But I don't know if there's that much really to add to this, Ben, other than just letting people know that it's there if they want to see it.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's a nice tool to have if you want to just go through everything for safety on Twitch. I will say that it, kind of in the vein of what we talked about recently, I thought it was kind of amusing that there's a gambling addiction section on here. Because there's the whole debate about gambling streams on Twitch right now. So they've built in a section for that. But there's also some good things like suicide hotlines and just crisis resources too. So that can be a big problem on Twitch. So I'm glad they've had some actual official resources out there, and not just for the US, but for UK and other places as well. That's what I'm seeing.
Yeah. So if you ever have a question about, you know, hot tubs and streaming on Twitch, it should be here.
That's right.
Let's go on to Discord. You want to introduce this one?
Yeah. So there's a couple of new features that have come to Discord over the last weeks. The first one was Threads, which I believe has been out for a while. I'm pretty sure. No, sorry. Threads is the new one that I have really not seen used that much, which is sort of opening like a sub channel for a channel on Discord, where I guess like if you have a very big server and there's a lot of kind of tangent conversations happening, you could use this to just have smaller conversations within that channel, which seems useful. I will say practically from a standpoint of moderation, it seems like it's hard to moderate these because they're kind of hidden from the default view. So I actually haven't used them in a lot of the servers that I've worked with, but it's a nice feature if you want to use this kind of thing there. And then the other one that they announced, which is, I think they haven't even announced it really, maybe sort of, is the events. Which is a new thing at the top of Discord. You'll see it in your server, and it's only for their audio stage channels. So you can only schedule a channel event for like a podcast or something. You can't do like a game night, which is what I wish we could do, or anything with video or just playing games. It's got to be a stage thing. So
right.
I think these are nice personally. Pete, I'm curious your thoughts just initially looking at each of these.
Yeah, threads for me, that's like something that's, I think, being in Slack for a little while. I don't think they had the exact same implementation where like it actually creates a sub thread that like shows in the left-hand side underneath the channel where it was created. I haven't enabled these on the Gaming Careers Discord yet, but I did get a notification saying that I could, but I wanted to speak to my moderators first really to see, yeah. Is this going to be a problem? You know, is this, because right now I wonder if like you can abuse with the thread name. Or if you could just create 100 threads, and does it show for everybody that's in the Discord channel, or is it minimized to start? Like, there's so many questions that, I mean, I could legitimately answer just by testing it for a few minutes, but I'm far too lazy for that. I'd rather see somebody else mess up first then me learn from their lessons. with the schedule events, yeah, that's a really great point that you made. Basically, the fact that you can only do this right now for the stage channels is, I hope, a limitation that they're going to remove at some point, because this would be amazing for live streams, for, I don't know, live podcasts, for anything, for meetups at TwitchCon when they eventually return. Like, being able to schedule an event is important for things outside of stage channels. And I understand the reasoning for them wanting to really push stage channels as a feature to people. But I really hope that they remove that limitation and you can start to schedule events for things, you know, outside of Discord's ecosystem, because that, I think that'd be a killer feature. And I think it's something that we saw on Guilded, which I know that we looked at briefly a couple of months ago when we were looking at the differences between Guilded and Discord. So I wonder if this is pressure from Discord seeing people leave for Guilded, or if this is just something that's always been on their radar and something that they've been developing for a long time.
Yeah, that's something I saw talked about too, is the pressure that Guilded is offering. I personally don't think it's really that, because I think Guilded works with Discord sort of too. But I don't know, the events feature in particular is one I've wanted forever. And we actually have, so in the Lenovo server, we haven't enabled the threads and we haven't used the events yet because they're just not quite there. The events one, like, we have an events channel separately, but we can't get rid of it because we still can't use Discord's event tool to make game nights or stream RSVP, that kind of stuff. So until they can support that, we can't really make a whole lot of use of it. And then threads, to your point too, for me, it's just a moderation concern of hiding conversations that moderators might miss, which on a big server can be a big problem. So I think it's a cool feature, but I'm not really going to be using either one until they make a couple of updates, I think, for most of the servers that I work with.
Yeah, I think I'm in the exact same boat. I'm going to wait to see exactly what comes of these things. Events will be really cool, and I'll definitely use that if they allow implementation of other things. Like, we could put other podcasts in, the live podcast that we do could be an event in the Gaming Careers Discord every week. And then I wouldn't have to spam people to let them know that it was happening on Instagram the whole time. But yeah, it's cool. I think it's been great to see Discord pushing like features for creators. They're really pushing themselves forward as, you know, not just a chat application anymore. But that also does make me wonder if they're going to keep events restricted to Discord features. And like live streams could be scheduled there, but they'd have to be Discord live streams.
They're really pushing the stage channels thing. We keep talking about that too. And it's gotta be working somewhere, right? Or maybe, because I haven't really tuned into any Discord stage channels yet, to be honest. I haven't done Clubhouse either, but the fact that we keep seeing so much push for these kind of things means there must be a lot of attention and some sort of traction happening for those off platform.
I think I'm like the ideal candidate for somebody that would like to listen to stage channels, because I am a big podcast listener and audiobooks listener, but I have to listen at like 1.5 to 2 times speed. I just can't listen that slowly. Like, I need to be distracting myself and trying to get in as much info as I can, like whilst out on a run or you know, going shopping or anything like that. And obviously you can't do that with live audio, so that's when they can work that out, how they can fast forward through time to be even quicker than the person speaking, then maybe I'll tune in. We're gonna jump back ship now to Twitch, about them discontinuing a pretty popular extension. Actually, this is one that I see on, you know, probably a good 20-30% of channels. It's the Blacksmith extension. I'll bring up the screen share here, and hopefully we can play this clip of DJ Wheat discussing why it was removed. So hopefully you can hear this as well, Ben, and stream too.
In case you missed it, the Blacksmith extension will no longer be available as of 7:30, as we are focusing instead on other features aimed at improving creator monetization. Now, this does not impact your opportunity to be a part of the Amazon's Associate Program, which is one reason why a lot of creators were using it. With Amazon Associates, you can share the products that you love with your community, and you can earn commission from viewers who purchase your recommended products on Amazon. It is easy to enable and to add to your channel page, and you can learn more about how to do that.
I love at this point how he's like selling, he's selling an extension that's about to be discontinued. He's like, it's really easy to use. You can just link it in your panels below. But we're discontinuing it at 7:30 tonight, which was like a few days ago. So stop selling it to us, DJ. We don't need to know about this feature that you're getting rid of.
Yeah. Stop rubbing salt in the wound, please.
this is a strange one. And I wonder if Twitch is seeing in the data that panels aren't being used or aren't being clicked on by viewers, and that's why they've decided to discontinue it, because it was a good extension and it was a popular one. As I'm sure you know, as a Twitch streamer, a lot of questions that streamers get is, what microphone are you using, what camera are you using. And this extension, for those of you that didn't listen to DJ Week just then, basically allowed you to link the products that you're using through Amazon's associate program, which means that if somebody clicked through and purchased that or something else on Amazon within a certain time frame, you as the streamer, because you referred them to Amazon, would earn a very small, admittedly, but commission. But for larger content creators, these Amazon affiliate programs can be, you know, big portions of their income. It's certainly for the Gaming Careers channel, a lot of the videos when we're reviewing gear, you know, particularly if I like a product and I recommend it, then people will click through that link to buy the product. So not quite sure why Twitch has removed this. DJ Week just kind of said that they're focusing on building better monetization options for streamers. I wonder if it was maintenance or just lack of use, or it wasn't profitable. I wonder even if it was Twitch that built it. It might have been people at Amazon that were maintaining it, and they said, look, this isn't worth our time to maintain. But yeah. I still think there's a big use case for affiliate programs and, you know, linking to products even in your Twitch chat. And maybe Twitch chat is an even better place to link products that you're using. You know, if you use a chat bot and you have, you know, a timer that runs every 30 minutes saying, here's all the gear that I'm using to stream, or, you know, here's the mouse that I'm using if you're a FPS gamer, and a link to it, maybe that's going to get more click through, because that's really where chat is looking. They're looking at the stream and they're looking at stream chat, and they're rarely, really scrolling down to those panels. So yeah, what do you think? Have you ever used the Blacksmith extension?
Yeah, I just checked because I actually had that on my channel and I didn't realize they had removed it till today. And it really was a good extension, because basically it was a long vertical extension. You could scroll through a list of products and see them visually and just click into Amazon to go see them. So I don't know what the maintenance requirement was for this kind of extension, but it didn't seem to change that much in my opinion. It just, you kind of add a product and it just shows up. The weird part to me is that the program's not going away, right? So the Amazon associate affiliate thing is still a program. So I don't know why they removed the extension, really, unless there must have been some sort of like tech issue with it, maybe. Or if they're working on new features, maybe they want to replace it with like display ads or something, or some sort of like integration on the stream itself. I don't know, maybe some better way they can show it, but it just seems like such a low effort thing to me that I don't know why you'd get rid of it, especially if the program's not changing in any way. I mean, I'm probably just going to go replace that with my own extension, essentially, or list of products and do the same thing.
Yeah, just bullet point list using the markup language. Yeah, I mean, I wouldn't be surprised if that's what I end up recommending people do at the moment. I wonder maybe if it was something to do. I think there was like a way that you could apply to Amazon Associates through this extension, or like through Twitch's integration with Amazon, and maybe they were getting way too many spam, you know, applications for that. I'm just trying to justify it in my head, because I can't think of a good reason, unless it was just not profitable. But I don't understand really what maintenance there would have been involved in that. It seems to have not changed in like 3 years since I first used it. So interesting decision by Twitch. But
are you saying there are bots on Twitch, Pete? Is that what's happening? That's news to me.
Do you want to jump into talking about that now? Because I don't have a card for it, but it does transition quite nicely. You can jump into it.
Yeah, I mean, we can talk on it really quickly. Just something I saw this past week that was really weird. If you guys have been streaming on Twitch lately, you've noticed some weird people following your channel and also just sitting in your Twitch chat and your viewers list, don't click on those channels because it seems like there's some really weird new scam going around where these bot channels are streaming and will go follow people and sit in other channels. And if you click on their profile and go to their channel, they'll have your IP address live streamed on their channel, which is really weird. And I've never seen this before. So I don't tend to click on my viewer list. So I don't know if anybody else has experienced this, but just a PSA, I haven't seen stories of people actually getting in any sort of trouble from this. It just kind of freaks them out to see their IP on there. But yeah, I would avoid that if you're concerned about your privacy and security at all.
Yeah, good PSA from Ben. Nicely found. And there was lots of complaints on Reddit. I brought up a Reddit thread here from 5 days ago of people saying that they're being spam bot followed all over the platform. So be careful on what you do and who you click on, I guess, would be the advice. Let's jump back into schedule and talk about XQC, because this is a big talking point, I think, especially it's weird to be talking about DMCA from a different angle. I guess it's kind of the same thing. For those of you that haven't followed this, I feel like it's a few days ago now, but XQC was restreaming the Olympics, which wasn't allowed to be restreamed, and adding his own, you know, critical commentary, as you could say. And he got a DMCA strike notification about it, asking him to take down the content. And him, along with his attorney, have decided to counterclaim, basically saying that it was within the fair use, which is a risky strategy. You're taking on like a media giant, and there's been a lot of chat from H3H3 about the attorney that he is using. And H3H3 had some experience of using this attorney when they had their famous fair use case, like, God, how long ago was that? 2 or 3 years ago, at least. And they ended up sacking him and hiring somebody different. I won't say better because I can't judge that. But they ended up winning the case. So this is interesting from a DMCA standpoint, but also kind of scary because how cases like this usually go, if it does end up getting taken to court, is the result of this court case could set a precedent for live streamers all over the platform, and whether they can, you know, say that things are fair use or not. So you kind of, as a streamer, you want XQC and his attorney to win this case quite badly, because then it's going to put us in better standing. So yeah, there's been a lot of discussion about this. I don't know how much you followed it. It kind of is borderline gossip, and we don't really like talking about gossip and drama on this show. It's a bit more industry news, but I think it is because it's the first time that a big streamer is basically standing tall and taking on the media giants about a DMCA claim. I think it was worth talking about anyway.
Yeah, I haven't followed the H3 side of it in the coverage, if they've had experience with that legal representative before. I think it's really interesting. I will say it seems pretty clear to me it's not fair use, at least the way that they, if you watch the Olympics, at least in the US, every time it comes on, it says like, this is an official broadcast, not for redistribution. Like every single time the Olympics comes on, they make that very clear. You cannot rebroadcast this. So I don't have the highest hopes, but on the flip side, I mean, I do think, you know, if we were able to watch Twitch streamers cover Olympic sports, that's a huge new audience for this stuff. So, you know, personally, I would love to watch this kind of stuff on Twitch. And so I'm kind of rooting for, if we see these types of, not just Olympics, but other types of public content be able to get shown on Twitch, I'd be all for that. But, you know, I have my own doubts as to whether that'll actually happen with this case, maybe sometime in the future. It's just a really weird one to me.
Yeah. It's also worth noting that we might not hear anything else about this. You know, the ideal situation here is the counterclaim is filed and then it just disappears. Nothing happens because of it. Basically, the strike gets removed from his account, and that is a likely case, I guess. But if it goes to court, then you'll definitely be hearing more about it, and we'll probably be covering it more closely on this show. I'm conscious that we've been going on for a little while now, so let's rattle through the last couple of things that we want to talk about. There's been some more local subscription pricing released this week for the EU, especially. I like how they've still included United Kingdom in Europe, even though we are no longer. We're not no longer in the EU anyway. But yeah, some more prices for local subscription prices. We've talked about this quite a lot on this podcast already. What is nice is us in the UK, we're going to be saving a whole British pound on our subscription. No longer £4.99, we're down to £3.99, which is nice, certainly. And obviously now, if you look at the list of how many of these local subscription prices there are, it's covering a decent chunk of the world. I don't know my geography that well to know what is still missing, but it feels like they've got through the vast majority of countries anyway. And from what we've seen in the data, it looks like for any of these countries where there is data already, I think the first two that we covered were Turkey and Mexico. Yeah. And we were seeing massive uptake from those countries, from viewers in those countries subscribing to channels. So hopefully this is a really good decision by Twitch, and all it means is that more people from these countries can afford to subscribe to their favorite creators. Anything else to add on this, Ben?
No, I mean, I think it's super comprehensive. I love how detailed they go in with the chart here, which is really nice transparency from Twitch. I will say my only concern is just, we'll see over the next year or two kind of how this affects overall subs, because there should be more people subscribing now, but theoretically, there's less revenue coming from it once Twitch tapers off their kind of support program for creators. So we'll have to see how it balances out. Hopefully it's about the same or a little bit more for most creators. I think that's how the beta places rolled out. But again, it's only been a couple months, not a couple years. So we'll kind of have to play that by ear a bit.
Yeah, in Twitch's patch notes stream that they do every month, they had a couple of experts on from rolling this out into different regions. And basically their feedback was like, so far, they've been surprised at how quickly it's sort of broken back even with streamers. Mm. So yes, they're earning less revenue per sub from these countries, but more people are hopefully going to be subscribing from these countries. So their initial feedback was 2 thumbs up, that it's going well. I guess we'll have to actually see. And we're still lacking a lot of the controls from the streamer side of being able to actually see where these subs are coming from. So that, I know there's a huge demand from people all over Twitter wanting to know all of this information, and surely Twitch must be listening and building something for us that'll probably come out in about 4 or 5 years time.
That's right.
We did have a good streamer question. I want to jump straight into the streamer questions. So I put a little Instagram story up, and we've got a good amount of questions across on Instagram. And the first was actually something that I'd missed. It was from Excel Joe, who is a regular here on the chat and has been a developer on OBS Project and several plugins that I've covered on the channel, and that I know that a lot of people are using day to day in OBS. Asked what I thought about the or what we thought about the OBS Project Bounty Program, and I don't know how this slipped by because I've got notifications turned on OBS's Twitter, but I must have just missed this completely. But just to explain it briefly, obviously OBS is completely community built. It's open source, and a couple of years ago, I feel like they opened up the option for people and for companies to sponsor the project, and those funds would be given to the developers that most regularly contribute to the code base. And I think last week or maybe 2 weeks ago, they announced that they have the second full-time developer. So somebody is joining Jim. I can actually open that up and tell you who it was. Dylan Pence joining Jim as a full-time developer. So that's their full-time job, is just to work on OBS Studio. But there's obviously a whole load of community contributors who also help build out features. And this is basically saying that there's now going to be a bounty program where they can assign funds, like a reward fund, to certain features. And then developers can sort of apply to be the person that will build that feature. And if they're chosen and they successfully build it and meet all of the specification, then they can earn money from it, which is, I think we can all agree, amazing. Because
yeah,
me and you, Ben, certainly, and many of the people watching are big fans of OBS Studio. The fact that this has been free software has basically changed the industry. It would not be where it is today without OBS Studio. So for money from big companies like Nvidia and Facebook and YouTube and Twitch, they're all big sponsors of OBS as a project. For that money to be assigned to developers who are building these features and now being rewarded for their hard work, I think is awesome. But I think it goes an extra level, actually, where you can assign as a community member, you can assign and donate some money to certain features that are being built. So this is really cool. I brought one up here as an example. This is a feature for VST3 support. So without getting too technical, right now OBS Studio supports VST2 plugins for things like audio compressors and equalizers and things like that. And this is a great example of this new bounty program where they want to include VST3 support. It's quite a complex project. There's some requirements for the proposal that a developer would hopefully be able to meet. And then you can see here the bounty for implementing this feature is $3,000. So this is awesome. Not only is it empowering more developers to be, you know, full-time freelance, but it makes our software that we use every single day better. And we can even kind of have some opinions as to what features we want to dictate to be built. Mm-hmm. So Ben, I've just been rambling and I've probably covered all the good points and you have nothing less to say, but what do you think?
Taking all my thoughts. Yeah, no, I mean, this is just an awesome feature across the board. I don't really see a downside to this in any way. I think it's really cool that you can choose which feature you want to support. So that example you have right there says 3,000, but it also says if you want to contribute more funds to increase the bounty, you just click right here and you can actually give more toward that specific bounty, which is amazing if you're a streamer who really, really needs VST3 plugins for some reason and you just want to support that and really kind of sweeten the deal. which is awesome. Plus, if you are someone who can either fix bugs or build new features, this is a way to just add more revenue on that side. So even if you, you know, aren't necessarily a streamer, but you want to support streamers in some way in the industry, then this is a whole new sort of way to do that. And depending on how many actual bounties there are, you could potentially support yourself pretty well doing that kind of thing, or at least make a good kind of side income on that. So I think it's a great feature across the board for just the streaming industry as a whole. And I, like you said, OBS Studio, I just use that every day. So I can't imagine I can't believe it's a free software. And stuff like this just makes me love it even more.
Yeah, and they've been quite smart around it, because as soon as I read this, I was thinking, this is going to create a war, a race for people to try and finish a feature as quickly as possible, and it won't be implemented properly and it'll be buggy. And obviously the developers will be reviewing all the code, but they've thought about that aspect, and actually you submit a proposal to be the person responsible for that feature. So, you know, I'm sure the OBS devs like Jim are well versed in being able to review people's applications and people's code. So I think this is awesome. All good news. It's going to make our software better, and it's going to reward the people that really are the heroes in this project, as well as now having two full-time developers. So my channel also wouldn't exist really if it wasn't for OBS Studio, and those videos always do super well whenever they release a new feature set. So I'm giving a big thumbs up, and I'll be putting some money aside for the features that I really want. You know, when they put Gaming Careers YouTube channel into one of the docs by default
That's right.
to every single person that downloads OBS Studio, I'll submit a couple of grand for that feature to be built.
Yeah, there's going to be some really wacky requests, like build me a custom thing, right? From people, some person who's got a ton of money is just going to put out $100,000 bounty on this one thing. You never know what people will actually make in the future.
Yeah. Well, I guess all features probably still have to be approved by Jim. In fact, they almost definitely do. But there's nothing stopping you from submitting that proposal and somebody just building you a custom OBS Studio. Anyway, they could just fork the project and building what you want to build and charging you for that. But yeah, really happy to see that. And thanks so much, Exaldre, for the question, because I would have missed it otherwise. And I don't like missing news. I think that's probably going to do us this week, Ben. Lots that we've covered, really. I'm excited to see what Q3 holds for the streaming industry. I'd love for Streamlabs and Stream Hatchet to work out a way of including all live stream data from YouTube. Like we mentioned at the time, I think that's really going to help us understand how YouTube is changing as a platform. And if they can work out a way of being able to collect all that live data, because I also feel like YouTube maybe as a platform has a bigger variety of live data, but I don't want to get back into that discussion. I'm trying to wrap up the show. So I think that's it for us this week. I think it's unlikely we'll have a show next Monday. I'm away at a wedding in the very, very north of England, so probably not going to be back until really late on the Monday night. But the next week we will be live again. Obviously, stay tuned to both of our Twitters and Instagrams, which are on screen at all times, and we'll update you when the next live show is. But thanks so much for so many of you again for joining and for the awesome questions that we've had throughout. And yeah, I think if that's all we've got to say, Ben, then we'll catch them in a couple of weeks.
Yeah, I was just going to say, if you guys have a question, if you're an audio listener and you can't make the show, definitely hit us up about anything you have with streaming. But also, I would love to hear if anybody uses these audio platforms, like the Discord stage channels, or I'm blanking on the other one, any of the voice stuff out there. I would love to hear from you on how you use it. Same thing for TikTok and Facebook. Some of these other platforms that we're kind of talking about on the fringes here, would love to get a bit more on these. So definitely let us know on social media and wherever else you can reach us.
Awesome. Yeah, that sums it up for us. And we'll catch you in a week or 2 weeks. See you later. All peace.
Right. See ya.